Hello, and welcome to this AAT podcast on delegation skills. Have you ever had someone come to your desk and dump some work on you and left you to get on with it? I think we've all experienced bad delegation, so we all know how that feels. Not very motivating, to say the least. Delegation is a key management skill, and to do this effectively will not only free up more of your time to develop your career, but will also lead to a more motivated workforce who will respect you as a leader. Hello, my name is Melanie Cassar, and I'm a member of the AAT and have been in the accounting profession for more than 20 years. During my career, I've had a lot of experience of having work delegated to me and delegating work to others. I have to admit, I didn't always get it right, which is why I can understand why you've chosen to listen in today. These days, I run my own training consultancy business, providing training in various management skills, and I also teach some accounting exam courses, including AAT. Good delegation is one of the most important management skills, as it is critical to your success as a leader in business. So I'm glad you could join me today to pick up some tips on good delegation, and this is what I'm going to cover in this session. First of all, I'm going to define delegation. Before we begin, we should all be clear on what this is. Next, we're going to look at why we should delegate tasks. So what's in it for you and what's in it for the person you're delegating to? Next, a look at the barriers. What are the things that stop us delegating? Next, what should you delegate? Some tasks you should perform yourself, whereas other tasks could be performed by somebody else. So it's important to identify the work you could or should delegate. Next, how to delegate. In this section, we'll look at the who, why, what, and how of delegation. Finally, delegating in practice. Here we will look at planning the delegation and monitoring its progress. So let's make a start with what delegation is. This is where you entrust someone else to do your work by giving them the responsibility for completing this. There are two key points here. Firstly, it's your work you're delegating, so a task that you are ultimately responsible for completing. For example, if I ask my secretary to book me a hotel for a two-day residential course I'm presenting next week, is this delegation? No, it's not, because it's part of her job description to do that. Whereas if I asked her to do some research for a new course I'm developing, that would be delegation, as it's my job to develop the course. The second key point is that you're giving the other person responsibility, but you remain accountable for its completion. Handing over responsibility means letting the other person act independently and make decisions. Whereas being accountable is the ultimate level of responsibility, in that you're required to account for your actions. This means that if the task is not completed on time or to accepted quality levels, it's your head on the chopping block. You cannot blame the person who you delegated the task to. So now we're clear on what delegation is, let's consider why we should delegate. When not done well, delegation can lead to confused, frustrated, demotivated staff, as well as failing to achieve the task to your satisfaction. So good reasons not to delegate. However, when done well, delegation motivates staff, develops them, and allows time for you to develop yourself. When first moving up the career ladder and starting to delegate, it can be quite tough learning to let go and giving someone else the opportunity to do the work you've become used to doing. After all, you may think you're the best person for the job and can do this more quickly and efficiently than anybody else. You're very much in your comfort zone. However, in order to develop yourself and continue to progress up the career ladder, you must take yourself out of your comfort zone and let go of the things that are holding you back. Consider the most senior person at work. This may be your boss, the managing director, or a senior partner in a firm of accountants. How much of the detailed work do they actually do? For example, in a firm of accountants, when was the last time you saw a partner carry out a stock take and complete the audit programme for this? Or when was the last time you saw your boss draft a detailed report and file all the background research that went to produce it? In my experience, the answer is never. This is because they did this when they were starting out on their careers, but their roles are now more strategic, dealing with higher level issues to win more work and deal with staff and client relationship issues. The point is that in order to progress up the career ladder and become the boss, you need to start delegating more work and to spend the time you save developing your other leadership skills. So what's holding you back from delegating? We've considered one of the reasons already, where you think it will be quicker and easier for you to complete the task, as you've done it for a number of years now and know it so well. You actually enjoy doing it. Therefore, you should understand that if you take this approach, you will always be doing this job and will never move on. If that's what you want, then that's okay. After all, some people find a job they like and are so content with it, they don't actually want to move on. For you to move on, you need to understand that initially, you may need to invest some time delegating this task. So it might actually take longer the first time. But after that, it will take less and less of your time, so delegation is worth it in the long run. You may think, as it's part of your job that you've been trusted to do, and so you're ultimately responsible for this, then it should be you that does it. However, whilst you are responsible for delivering the work, you're not necessarily responsible for doing it. Another barrier is that you're often too busy and don't have enough time to delegate. If this is the case, you should consider listening to my AAT podcast on time management, where a big part of the answer is to delegate relevant tasks. By learning to delegate well, you'll save time and actually end up with more time to concentrate on the things that are going to stretch you and take you to the next level. Another typical reason people state is that there is no one available to delegate to. If you work in a very small organisation where it's just you or you and the owner, then that may be the case. However, for everyone else, if there are no junior staff available to delegate down to, you can always delegate sideways to your peers, for example, another manager. This may be appropriate for some tasks, for example, technical research, where another manager has more time to complete this, or where they have specialist or expert knowledge. In addition, it's perfectly feasible to delegate upwards to a more senior manager or your boss. Again, the work should be appropriate for them to do. When considering the reasons not to delegate, ask yourself, are these reasons or are they just excuses? Following this, I hope you concluded that there are no reasons not to delegate. So let's move on and consider what you should delegate. When thinking about what to delegate, you should first consider your to-do list. For example, what work you've planned to do over the coming days or weeks. Take a few moments to have a look at your list or write one up, or just to think about this. If you're sitting at your desk, it's worth pausing this recording and making a list if you don't already have one. Having prepared your to-do list, how do you decide what you're going to do first and then after that? Most people will make this decision based on the item's urgency and importance. An item is urgent if it must be done now or today, whereas important items help you to achieve your goals. They are the things that are important to you. So next, have a look at your to-do list and mark against each item whether they are important or urgent or both. If necessary, pause this recording. Now you've assigned an important or urgency score against each of your items, we're now going to consider Stephen Covey's time management tool. This is something we use on time management courses, but can also be used to identify what to delegate. Stephen Covey, the author of The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, said we can categorise our to-do list into one of four sections of a quadrant. They can be urgent and important, urgent but not important, important but not urgent, or finally, not important and not urgent. So the first of these, urgent and important. These are the items that should be at the top of your to-do list. They should be done now or today and by you, so should not be delegated. In this section, we're busy achieving lots towards our goals. Next, we have urgent but not important. We all have things to do which aren't necessarily going to help us achieve our goals and climb the corporate ladder, but nevertheless are still urgent. Here's an example from my experience of working for a firm of accountants. One of the tasks I least enjoyed doing was my weekly timesheet. It usually needed to be completed by 5 p.m. each Friday. Therefore, if not completed by 4:30 p.m. on a Friday, it suddenly became urgent. However, doing this was not going to help me achieve my goals or impact on my career progression, so it was not important. Therefore, on occasions where I simply didn't have the time to do this, I delegated it to my secretary after giving her the information she needed to do this. Therefore, items that are urgent but not important should be delegated to somebody else. They're urgent, so they need to be done, but they don't necessarily need to be done by you, so delegate them. Next, we have items that are important but not urgent. However, if left long enough, they will become urgent. For example, it's the start of a new month. You know that by the month end, you must issue a number of client fee notes. These are important as you have targets to deliver in terms of your fees that you raise each month. You could leave this until the last day of each month when it becomes urgent, but this is very risky as you don't know what other urgent work will come up on that day. As you know about it now, you could delegate it to a more junior member of staff. Whilst it may not seem right to delegate important tasks, they do provide valuable development opportunities to more junior members of staff, setting them in good stead for their own promotion opportunities. This will then free you up to focus on other more urgent and important tasks that would challenge you, as well as helping to practice your own delegation skills. For items in your to-do list which are important but not urgent, you should either diarise them, ensuring they're done before they become urgent, or delegate them. Finally, we have items that are not important and not urgent. If you have any items in this section, you need to consider whether you should be doing them at all, so stop doing them. Examples include reading junk emails, playing solitaire, or having long chats at the coffee machine. These are items that are often not on your to-do list, but do actually take up time. So for a recap, we've now considered all the four sections of Stephen Covey's time management matrix. So take some time to review your to-do list again. Are you happy with your important and urgent assignments? Consider putting them into four separate lists, being urgent and important, the things that need to be done by you as soon as possible. Urgent but not important, delegate these items, usually to somebody more junior. Important but not urgent. You can either diarise these for later or delegate them to somebody immediately more junior, a peer, or somebody more senior. Not important and not urgent. You need to stop doing this. Once in these new lists, if there seem to be too many items in the urgent and important categories, you're constantly going to be firefighting, ultimately leading to stress. So consider again if you really need to do them or should you delegate them. Now you know how to identify what to delegate, we can move on and look at how to delegate effectively. To do this, we're going to look at the who, why, what, and how of delegation. First of all, who. To delegate well, you need to know about the person you're delegating to in terms of their skills, knowledge, and experience, and their particular learning style. For example, are they an activist, someone who likes very little detail and just wants to get stuck in? Or are they a theorist who will want lots of detail before they will want to get stuck in? In terms of knowledge and experience, delegating a bank reconciliation to a new trainee is going to take longer and require more coaching than delegating to a more experienced member of staff who will have done this task many times before. When considering who to delegate to, check their availability to do the work at this early stage. There's little point planning to delegate this work if you later find out they're just about to go on a 2-week holiday. Why? The why of delegation is about selling the benefits. Why should this person help you? To motivate this person to help you, you need to tell them what's in it for them. For example, if your manager dumped a wad of papers on your desk and asked you to add up the numbers, how would you feel? It's not the most stimulating or rewarding of tasks. However, If they were to add that this is for a report the managing director is putting together to assess the viability of an office relocation, all of a sudden the task is more attractive. First of all, the work you do will be reported to the managing director. And secondly, it's for an important project which has the potential to affect you. By adding some context, you will sell the delegation, motivating them to help. Other reasons you can give include to give you a break from your normal work, to give you something more challenging to work on, so that I can give you some feedback towards your next appraisal. By telling the person you're delegating to what's in it for them, so selling the benefits, you'll get their buy-in and commitment to do the work and to do it well. Next is what. This is about what you want to be done, but not necessarily how to do it. Delegation is about giving the other person freedom to choose how they do it. So as long as they deliver what you want at the agreed time and for the agreed budget, then that should suffice. The what should be given in overview first, followed by more detail as necessary, given the other person's knowledge and experience. It's essential that you give a clear definition of what you want to be done. It's therefore best to think about what you want the end product to be or to look like. For example, for a project to mitigate tax liabilities on a global group reorganisation, do you want a 35-page detailed report or do you want a 5-page summary document with options? By making this clear at the outset, avoids the other person doing too much work, spending too much time and cost on something that's just too technical and detailed for the end users to absorb. Tell the other person you're delegating responsibility to give them the freedom to do the work, but that you remain ultimately accountable for the delivery. Finally, we have the how of delegation. This is where you set guidelines. Do you want the task done in a particular way? Do you know someone who has previous experience or expertise who you can advise the other person to contact? Who should they contact at the client, if relevant? And how should you address them? Warn them of any pitfalls you know of. Include information on resources, for example, deadline, budget, how long should it take them? Also include your contact details and availability. If the task is large, suggest interim meetings for an update on progress or for you to review the work done to date. To wrap the delegation up, you need to confirm their understanding. Have they understood you correctly and are they going to deliver what you expect? To do this, don't just ask, is that okay or do you understand? The answer will invariably be yes, as people don't want to appear stupid, especially in front of their boss. Try saying, just so I can be sure I've explained this correctly, can you please summarise what I've asked you to do? This will ensure you have the opportunity to correct any misunderstandings before the work commences and you don't find out too late when the deadline approaches and time and cost have already been incurred. Finally, ask the other person if they have any questions and then remind them that you're going to be providing feedback on the task, which will form part of their next appraisal, and make sure you schedule time to do this. By delegating in this way, you've taken the individual into account, sold the benefits to them, told them what you want, but given them responsibility for deciding how to do it. And you've given them access to you in the event of any problems or questions. Putting all of this into practice requires good planning. Consider the early example where a wad of papers is just dumped on a desk and the person asked to add the numbers up. To successfully delegate in a way that motivates and develops your staff needs time. You should therefore take time to plan the delegation. This is where you plan for the delegation meeting. You would never go to a meeting with your boss or client without preparing first and having an agenda. So why would you do this with a member of your staff? Block time out in your diary to do this and think through what you're going to say before the meeting. Make an appointment with the other person to hold the delegation meeting after checking they're available to do the work. Next, hold the meeting, remembering to delegate the work in overview first, selling the benefits to get buy-in, and then go into more detail as necessary. Finally, schedule any follow-up meetings, a date for the final review, and a date for the feedback. By putting these events into your diary means you can get on with other work without the need to micromanage the other person. Generally, people don't like the manager hovering over their shoulder, and you should trust them to get on with the work as agreed. We're now coming to the end of this podcast, so let's just review what we've covered. First of all, a definition. So what is delegation? This is where we define delegation as entrusting someone else to do your work by giving them responsibility for this. Next, why should we delegate a task? Here, we looked at why delegation is an essential skill for your career progression. Next, we looked at some of the barriers, the things that stop us delegating, and asked if they were reasons or excuses. Next, we looked at what you should delegate, where we looked at Stephen Covey's urgency and importance time management model to help us identify items we could delegate. These were the urgent but not important items and the important but not urgent items. Then we looked at how to delegate. In this section, we looked at the who, why, what, and how of delegation. Finally, we looked at delegating in practice, where we looked at planning the delegation and actually putting aside time in our diaries to cover this so that we can then get on with other more challenging work. As an action point, go to your to-do list and select a task to delegate. Then start planning your time to do this and put your learning into action. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast, but it's only going to be useful if you do actually go away and put into practice the new things you've learned. Good luck.